Today's episode is brought to you by Media for All, which was set up to help encourage more Black, Asian, and other ethnic talent into media, and to provide a support and mentoring network to ensure talent flourishes in the media industry that we all love. If you're looking for a mentor or would like to mentor young ethnic talent, check them out at mediaforall.org.uk, and it is all 100% free. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a podcast about the future of marketing. Every week, I have the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing one of our industry's leaders about their vision for the future of marketing, and this week's no different. I'm on a call with Eilat Cohen-Bassat, who is Managing Director of the Global Digital Innovation Lab at Kimberly Clark Corporation. Eilat, thanks so much for joining the podcast today. Can you tell the audience a bit more about what you do and what your career has looked like so far?
Yes, thank you, Tom. Happy to be here. So I'm a kind of a mixture. I've spent my life in technology. I've created new businesses, either in startups or in big corporates. And 6 years ago, I took the leap and moved from technology sector into CPG to start the Global Digital Innovation Lab at Kimberly Clark, with the thought of that innovating and changing is such a big, prominent company that touches everyone's life could actually change and touch each and every one of us. So this is me.
And so what were the startup businesses that you were involved in?
So I was involved in two very interesting ones. One is, of course, cyber. So I'm out of Israel, so this is like 50% of what we do, cyber. So one was cyber security. The other one was really, really interesting. It was a software company in the oil and gas industry. And it's an interesting story because we actually, because of us being like a very strange creature between the, you know, very soft, fast-paced software segment and the very low-paced oil and gas and energy sector. So we went public in order to raise money to grow, and it actually stopped us from being a startup. And therefore, the minute we were bought again by a private equity, actually blew the company up, and then it grew so tremendously, it became a unicorn. So it was an interesting story and a great, great team of people, really so right afar and with a great vision of changing this industry.
And so what made you switch from a, sounds like, very successful startup career to going to a huge company like Kimberly Clark and setting up the Innovation Lab?
So actually, I wasn't only in startups, as I said. I was also in big companies. And just before Kimberly Clark, I spent 7.5 years in the telecom industry, where I've actually was an entrepreneur, in-house entrepreneur. I've created there, at the telecom industry, some of the most interesting things that I've done in my careers, which were innovation centers and innovation entities for telecom providers around the world. And this was an industry in change, and the leaps and the visions and the activities that we've made over there in order to digitize that industry and the players over there and the risks that we've taken. So all of that led me then after to be some of a thought leader in this domain. And when Kimberly Clark asked me to come on board, I had my doubts because I've never been in CPG, and I thought that I didn't know how to handle, you know, being in a non-technological company. I still feel sometimes like I'm breaking things, which is fine. I mean, this is what we should do as innovators, we should break things. but we should break them in a manner that we're learning from them and we're creating from them. And I thought the one thing that made me decide on doing that is what I've said before, is the fact is that if we're successful, then we're successful in a way that changes our lives, the consumer's life. And this is and this is what actually made me do the leap, aside from the fact that I'm a constant learner and a constant student, that was an industry I've never been in. And I said, okay, let's see what it's all about. And then I made the leap.
So what is the most useful thing that you've bought with your own money since you've been doing this job?
So I want to say that even before, the thing that I've invested in is French courses. And it's not just the French courses. It's the thing is knowing other people's culture. And this and many things that I've, and many things that I've bought later on with my money that kind of put me closer into people's culture, helped me create a beautiful relationship with people all around the world, and helped me succeed in the global organizations that I've been working in, whether startups or big companies, because at the end of the day, you work with people. You work with people and you need to understand where they come from and what motivates them. And I think that was one of the great things that I bought with my money, this knowledge of others' people's culture.
And that's a really interesting response. No one's ever mentioned French courses in 83 episodes of this podcast, so brilliant. So what new beliefs or behaviors have changed your work life in the past 5 years?
So you probably know, Tom, that as innovators, we're always, you know, somewhat against the stream, or we're somewhat always being, you know, having thoughts that are not commonly spread around. And I found out in the last 5-7 years that the one behavior that I've took upon and practiced is mentoring and coaching. And I came across the fact that when you identify the people that have the spark, and when you identify the people who want to learn more, and you mentor and coach them, you create an amazing internal environment for growth. It doesn't have to be within your territory. It doesn't have to be within your own current organization. I mean, like your unit in the organization. It doesn't have to be within your direct command chain. And I found out that this mentoring and coaching and giving from myself and from my knowledge and my thoughts, I also got back a lot. And by these very personal and informal, completely informal sessions and the interactions, I believe that this is how you create the vibe, the right vibe within an organization, and also lead people. People find themselves self-motivated to do things. And so I found that mentoring and coaching is an amazing thing. And I'm very proud to say that some of the people that I've mentored and coached then, you know, grew wings and went places and grew up things from themselves, you know, within big corporates or in startups, which is an amazing thing for me.
So when do you decide that you are ready to be a mentor?
I think that for me, it was a combination of a will and a need. I mean, from one end, I needed to create an environment, or I needed more people than the budget that I had in order to make the change that I wanted to create in the places that I was in, from one end. And on the other end, from a wheel, I really wanted to try and create an environment where people are asking questions, okay? Like I was asking questions, and in order for people to need to ask questions, you need to intrigue them. And so from that matter, I decided that if I wanted to ask questions and I want them to ask questions, so let's have these interactions, let's have these things. It also gives you a lot of feedback on yourself, it puts a mirror in front of you, because the only, imagine when you work in an organization, you usually interact only with the interfaces that your job or your role kind of, you know, puts in front of you. But this mentoring session creates more interactions, creates more spread in the organization, creates more people that give you feedback, puts mirror in front of you. So there was a time when I thought that, one, I need to spread the word, and this was a great thing to do. And on the other end, I also wanted to try and find out more about what we can do differently. And this is why I started mentoring other people.
If you love all things innovation and want to understand how brands plan to emerge stronger from the current situation, don't forget to check out Madfest London on the 11th and 12th of November. My good friend Dan at Madfest knows how to put on a cracking event, and there's always plenty of amazing speakers, beer and cool people to meet. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So we're going to move on now to your shiny new object, which you've described as innovating and changing big enterprises. So I think I know what that means, but can you explain for the listeners what you mean by that?
Yes, of course. So as I told you, Tom, I come from a varied background. I've been in both. And there's a misconception, there's a thought that big organizations are, you know, they can't change from one end, which has some truth into that. But I think that the real thing is how can they do it and not whether they can do it. And I think that in today's world, if you look at the landscape, even pre-pandemic and of course post-pandemic, I don't believe that the competition of big organizations come from other big organizations. They are literally coming from all the newcomers that are presenting new alternatives in many manners, and we'll talk about that in a second. So the question is, and hopefully, you know, we'll get to big organizations. So what is it that you could do? I mean, what is it that big organization can do in order to become more competitive and not just retain what they have today, but rather be more competitive in the new landscape that comes about, that has all these newcomers and new startups. So this is what I'd love to discuss with you. And I think that this is what I also have a lot of experience in.
So I just want to know so much about that statement. So how do you do that? I mean, that makes so much sense that, right, you've got all of these new competitors coming into the market, these smaller, nimble businesses. So how do you take advantage of those people coming into the business? How do you make sure that you're working with the best talent and the right people?
I think that one of the two things that I've noticed, you know, working in these two domains, one thing is that innovating in big organizations is incremental to the fact is that big organizations always try to change one or two angles of what they do in order to compete better. So I'm selling offline, I sell online. I do products that do X, I'll add a service that does Y. Whereas newcomers, they question everything. They question the business model, they questioned what it should be, product or service. They literally rebuild it from scratch. And I feel, and I saw big organization reluctant of doing so, because from one end, they have a lot to lose, right? I mean, like they already have their supply chains, they have, and never mind if it's a technology organization or a CPG organization, for that matter, they have product, they have revenue streams, they have supply chains, etc. From one end. The other thing that I observed is the need for bigger organizations to do everything A to Z. What does it mean? It means that in some places you call it not invented here, etc. But it's not just the not invented here. It's also how you do stuff. Okay, it means actually that you develop in the same manner, that you market in the same manner, that you have behaviors that sometimes you cannot change in big organizations. So this is how you do stuff. And I think that these two characteristics, okay, of what is actually different between small organization or newcomers, if you want to, and big organizations, is something that is so obvious it keeps from big organizations from innovating and change, you know, innovating and changing. So this is where I feel that a new way of thinking should come in place. So so I think at the end of the day, out of these two characteristics that we've outlined, the very obvious things that newcomers do is they continue challenging themselves, or what we call we know as pivoting. Okay, so they don't think that what they thought of from the beginning is the very best thing. They don't think that it's the only thing that they could do, and this is how they could do it. And this actually plays back to the second point that I've mentioned, is that big organizations go by strategy, go by tactics, business planning, and so forth. And whatever was written in the PPT should become out of the thing. And so how do you solve? How do you actually solve these two paradigms, okay, of this very agile, very, I don't take anything for granted, I have to take everything for granted. I have to be very, very secure and very planned and so forth. So I think that organizations should, as much as they can, reduce the barriers that they're creating from themselves. And I think that one of the ways to do it is ways that I was very honored and happy to be practiced before, is to create a side organization, a very agile startup organization that can do whatever that they want, and it would challenge the incumbent. It would challenge the big corporate, okay? And when I say do whatever that they want, it's really literally be able to place bets as they want, create things as they want, not risking any brand names, etc., and be able to not necessarily, you know, create everything for themselves, but also create things with newcomers, maybe at the end buy newcomers and so forth. And at the end, there should be an exit strategy to this new territory created. Okay, and these exit strategies should be in line with the goals of the big organization, whether you create new businesses out of it, whether you now, after it's proved itself, be part of the organization, or it should be exited completely, aborted. But the idea is that I've learned so much in my past experience that now defines future, and making big enterprises that make money today will always define new entities within that don't make as much as money. It's always funny to me to hear a big organization saying, okay, we want the bet that will create the next $1 billion things. You know what? Amazon was not $1 billion when it started. And I'm sure that that Uber wasn't as well. They had a vision, but if they would have lived within another organization, and with all the money that they lost, they would be shut after a year. So just something to think about.
So what advice would you give to someone who had an innovation role at a different company, maybe a smaller business, and that business had given them the job of setting up an innovation culture? What are the key things that you need to do when beginning this process?
I think that at the end of the day, an innovation role in a big company it depends on the organization, of course, but I'm just making an assumption here, has a twofold. Okay, one is hopefully create the new things for the company, and the second thing is to change the company and impact whatever that it does today, whether it's marketing, sales, whatever. To the latter, I can say that it's all about culture. As much as you want to do projects and whatever, it's all about culture, and you really need to find the way to get it into the KPIs of the organization. And when I say KPIs of the organization, it means even celebrate failures. Okay, you need to find a mechanism. I'm just saying, this is just as an example. We also had a mechanism that says that celebrates creativity. But whatever, it needs to be something that is not necessarily just a project that will be hidden somewhere in an LOB or whatever. It has to be something that the company recognizes as something that it is a behavior. Okay, so this is one thing that I would do. The other advice that I would give, in order to be successful, you have to have a right combination of top down and bottom up. So you have to create wins, yes, but you have to understand that the company, the board of directors, the CEO, they're there. If you have this, then you can create what I've just talked about. You can create this entity who will be independent enough to create those new businesses, to create those new value propositions, because this entity will probably need other skill set that there is in the company, or different behaviors, or different or different processes and so forth. So when you have the top down support, then you could do that. With bottom up support, you can create quick wins and excitement within the organization. But I like that you could create the next big thing for the company.
Well, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the episode now, and we could literally talk about this all day. It's so interesting to hear your advice and experiences. But if someone wanted to get in contact with you to learn more about how you do what you do, how would you like them to do that?
The best way is LinkedIn. I'm very active. Yeah, so just look me up, Eilat Cohen Basat. Luckily, I don't have many people in this name. Yeah. So you can just look me up and just connect with me via LinkedIn.
And what makes a killer LinkedIn message to you?
A killer, really? I think that somebody who wants to who wants to create new things always excites me. So yeah, if you guys want to create new things, then sure, ping me.
Brilliant. Ayla, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Tom. Been a pleasure.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.